Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd her career get there?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.
This is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And my guest today is Misty Bruce. Misty is the executive director of the Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training. Welcome, Misty.
Thanks for having me.
Thrilled to have you here. Let's go ahead and get right into it. Let's start, I'm going to start present day and then I'm going to get in our time machine. We'll go back. Give like a 30,000 foot overview of what the Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training is.
In one bullet point, it saves lives. It is uniquely situated to take a veteran, a caregiver, a survivor, and sometimes a community member that has been turned away from other organizations to reinvent hope and tailor that hope toward that individual. We see people who are typically in crisis, whether it's from a job, a relationship, loss of benefits. Every person that walks through that door has a different story, but the result is always the same. We resituate hope and tailor it to the individual so they can move forward with whatever's next for them.
You know, I always admire people that do such, and we can all do it in our little corners of the world, but people that do such impactful and meaningful work. And I love having conversations like this with people like you, because it's always interesting to me to figure out how they got into that line of work and what really inspires them. So let's get in our time machine and go back. Tell us a little bit about you as a kid. Where are you from? What were you like as a kid? Siblings, only child? How'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Texas. So I'm a Texas native, go Cowboys. And grew up with, you know, siblings, two sisters and a half brother, and grew up with a Native American father and an Irish mother who came from different cultures with different perspectives in two different age brackets. So it was interesting for sure. But grew up very traditional, with traditional gender roles in the household. I grew up in a Christian household in a very small community where, you know, the typical Texas community, I hate to say that, stereotypical, you know, if you didn't play football or you weren't a cheerleader, then you were rooting for the football team and the cheerleaders, kind of, you know, as you can imagine.
Friday Night Lights is true.
It is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. That's right. And so growing up that way, a lot of hard work, you know, growing up on a ranch, having to mend fences and, you know, eating everything that we grew. I don't think I had Cheetos until I was 13 or 14 and went to my first slumber party. Very structured childhood and lifestyle. Overachiever. I love A pluses, and then can I get some extra credit with that A plus? So always on the honor roll. But even as a child, I was committed to what can I do? How can I help? You know, I think seeing people struggle has always been my kryptonite. I have always railroaded myself or made myself late for something or put my dreams or goals on hold if there was someone in need and I felt I had the capacity to help them. And I would say that started at home, like, I come from a group of, we'll say giving. Some people would say nosy, but we'll say giving women. And so always looking for a way to have a positive impact on someone's life. So it's just something. So I would say that contributes to the work ethic that I have today, which I think now there's clinical terms for that. But the work ethic that I have today and why I still continue to try to be one of the people that will raise my hand if someone needs help.
And when you were a kid, do you remember thinking, you know, I'm air quoting this, when I grow up, I want to do this?
For sure.
X, whatever X. What was X?
And it wasn't this. I really thought that, gosh, I wanted to be a lot of things. I rode in the rodeo because I was going to be a rodeo star. I wanted to be an attorney. I wanted to be an actress. I wanted to crack the nut on how to be one of Dolly Parton's backup singers. Like, there were a lot of things, right, that I wanted to be. I thought I wanted to be in the roller derby, you know, because in the early 80s, my roller skates were the old school ones with the metal wheels, you know, the ones where you go down the sidewalk and you shoot sparks, that kind of thing. So I had a lot of things that I thought I wanted to do. I didn't really set my heart on something until I was about 19 or 20 years old. And then I had, you know, a major incident that occurred in my life that helped me finally decide that I want to be in a position where I can say yes to people who are hitting brick walls of no's. And
can you share what that is? What that was at 19?
Yeah. So I fell in love in high school, and my high school sweetheart was a couple of years older than me, and college wasn't for him. He had dyslexia, and it was just really challenging for him. So he decided to, when he graduated, to join the military. And he joined the military. I finished high school. We continued dating. And he asked, he proposed and wanted to get married. And so I asked my dad, and my dad said no. I had a full ride scholarship to Baylor University. So he said, absolutely not. If you're still in love after you finish this degree, then you can get married. So I did what any good Christian girl from a traditional background would do. I eloped and got married anyway. And we ended up relocating. So I was disconnected from my family because, you know, in like 1992, 93, no one had cell phones except those Miami Vice people, right? Like AOL Instant Messenger. That's how old I am. AOL Instant Messenger didn't even exist. Like it wasn't a thing.
Yep. So I remember those days too, for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Yep.
So being disconnected from your family was different than it is now. So like you truly were disconnected. And everything was fine. Everything was great. I didn't care. I worked a really cruddy part-time job at a store that sold clothes I would never wear in the mall. I went to college, lived in a horrible studio apartment. Horrible.
You went to Baylor? Did you go to Baylor?
I did not. I gave up my scholarship. So I landed at Liberty University. And the thing that kind of changed my mind about what I wanted to do, about 8 or 9 months in, my husband was killed in the line of duty. And so then I found myself a very young 19-year-old widow who didn't have any friends because I didn't need any. I was in love, right? I didn't have the things you're supposed to have, life insurance, a savings account. I was disconnected from my family. And at that time, the last organization standing was the American Red Cross. They came to my apartment 3 times before I finally accepted help from this very pushy volunteer who saw how old I was on the emergency services case and just for whatever reason refused to take no for an answer. And so she made me become a Red Cross volunteer. And she taught me how to balance a checkbook, how to file things, how to answer the phone without sounding like a jerk, the right way to make coffee if you were to ask her. But more importantly, she taught me what it felt like to take someone who could see no way forward, who really was in despair, and elevate them to breathing again, and then on to hope. She taught me the importance of being someone who says, I can help, or someone that was willing to just be in the right place at the right time to stick to your guns. She helped reconnect me to my family. And so it was during that 6 months initial volunteering, and she connected me to resources, helped me keep, I was being evicted, right? Helped me keep my apartment. I couldn't eat. She got me back in class, got my crappy job back, you know, all those things. One woman.
Mm-hmm. I am sorry to hear about your husband. I can't imagine that that ever heals. I haven't been through anything like that. And I can't imagine. So I'm sorry to hear about that, even this many years later.
Yeah.
How, to your point, one woman, I can go really deep on this. I could talk for hours about this. So I'll try to keep us on focus, but I always think about the ripple effects of one person's action, one person's word, one person's sentence or series of actions, as this woman did for you, and how that can then affect, now fast forward, right, the type of work that you do now, and then the people that you affect, and how that ripples and goes on. And it's always so impactful to me. And I'm always curious to find out, this woman, does she know, whoever she is, does she know how much she impacted or helped change your life?
So I would think so, because, you know, she's been gone for about 18 years. Her name was Beverly. So she's been gone about 18 years. But even just seeing me fall in love again, right? Get remarried,
mm-hmm.
Completely change. So I'm not an attorney who likes to do community theater on the weekends, which mm-hmm. was my goal at 18, right? So just even seeing that I finally feel like I found what I was supposed to do. So being able to be a part of that, knowing that I could go home after a day of classes and volunteering with the Red Cross and there would be something to eat in my refrigerator. So I think it echoed in little ways to her. And then, you know, her understanding just the value it added to my life, being reconnected to my family. She for sure, excuse me. You did that on purpose. So she for
I'm
sure.
Right there with you, by the way. I'm holding my tears back.
But you don't have to talk. So she for sure saw in my personal relationships that ripple. And then I think for her, she was one of those people who would question. So even when I didn't live in Virginia anymore, even when, right, I wasn't volunteering for her anymore, it was still a check-in. I'm one of those people who won't talk to you for a couple of months and then text you and be like, yay, what's up? You know, like, we've just been talking every day.
Right.
So she, yes. She for sure. And she would always reality check me, you know, be like, oh, I'm going to be a human resources director. She was like, are you? That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. Or, you know, oh, I'm going to be this. Are you? Okay. That's interesting. And
I love that.
There were moments where I could tell when she thought I was doing what I was supposed to do.
I love that.
When others, I was just treading time. She, you know, she didn't say treading water. She was like, oh, you're not treading water. You're treading time. She's like, I could pour you a glass of water and then refill it and give that back to you.
Mm-hmm.
But treading time, I can't give you the time you've treaded back.
So one thing none of us can get more of, no matter what, right. No matter what.
Mm-hmm. I think she would love that. I do. I think she would love to know how many people that I've tried to help.
So fast forward then, you know, you have this event, you know, I don't know what else to call it, that happens to you when you're 19. You obviously go through a lot to get back to, you know, I'll call it baseline, right? For lack of a better way to put it, if that, mm-hmm. that word's okay with you. How do you then get from there to the work that you're doing today?
So really an accumulation of experiences. I took a job in higher ed for a little while at Clemson University, working with international students, and that really opened me up to a lot of different cultures and reminded me that when the students would interface with me, no matter where the people were from or the language barriers we sometimes faced, all the needs were fundamental. They were basic, right? Mm-hmm. Maslow effect. Mm-hmm. Hierarchy, right? So, yeah. So they were all basic. And then I would say an accumulation of events, continuing to volunteer with the Red Cross, but also then, you know, working in human resources and working in finance and administration. And then volunteering at churches and schools and on installations, military installations in different parts of the country. I found myself then going from a service to armed forces specialist in the state of Alaska to the coming to from Alaska to Maryland in 2019 to take on an executive director role for the American Red Cross. And then being again in the right place with an accumulation of experiences and someone saying, hey, would you like to also be? And so then I found myself working as the interim service to armed forces director. And that again opened my network up even further to a whole different set of people and contacts and experiences. And I wasn't necessarily looking for another job. I then, the Red Cross mission is beautiful. I still volunteer for the Red Cross. So I left employment. I've been at MCVET six months, but I still volunteer with the Red Cross. So I'm a disaster volunteer, service to armed forces volunteer. And I help. I sit on the National Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Committee, or the person who kind of oversees curriculum. So, But then MCVET happened. It was interesting. I've worked thousands of veteran cases in my 30 years at the Red Cross, thousands. And I was like, what's a MCVET? Right? Like when they reached out to me. And I even called a former SAF manager and friend, Judy. And I was like, did we work with MCVET? What's a MCVET? You know, kind of thing. And she's like, oh yeah, I remember them. So, you know, I didn't know what to expect. For some reason, I was like, yeah, I'll come for an interview. Mm-hmm. And so I showed up down in Baltimore City. And when I got to the building, I parked on the wrong side. And I would say that side of the street has more challenges than the other side of the street. So I was like, okay, I got this. No big deal. I've been in all kinds of places and under all kinds of conditions. I can do this. And as soon as I hit the door, the gentleman who answered the door said, good afternoon, ma'am. Welcome to MCVET. I'm so-and-so. I'll be your security guard for the day. What brings you here? And I said, well, I'm here for a job interview. And he said, well, jobs are good. And so he was doing his thing because we were still in COVID protocols.
Yeah.
He was like, any questions for me? I was like, yeah. Why are you wearing a hat in the building? But because that's a military thing, right? Yeah. And he was like, ooh, you're going to get this job. And so for that first 3 months, I worked 15 to 18 hour days nonstop, right-sizing programs, making sense of financials, just all the things, assessing staff, taking a look at process and procedure, all to identify, you know, maybe where gaps were, taking a look at the programs, how can we streamline things. And I kept doing it even when I was exhausted because, like, no, the veterans need me.
Mm-hmm.
The veterans need me. And then it was Memorial Day weekend. We had just gotten a $3 million check from Congressman Fume. And I was rushing back to the building to change out of my, yes, I'll take your check dress, into my Orioles outfit because we were taking veterans to an Orioles game. And a veteran, a Vietnam veteran that I had helped a couple weeks before, he had come to me in the parking lot and he said, Miss Bruce, I know we're not supposed to approach you in the parking lot. And It's like, is that a rule? Like, because right, I'm new. I'm like, is that a rule?
Right, right.
I felt like every corner I turned, they'd be like, oh, you can't do that. And I'm like, oh, there's a rule? Like, I was just like, okay. And he was like, yeah, there's a rule. And I was like, oh. I was like, well, you already did. So, like,
what's might as well talk. Yeah.
And he said, when you have time, I could really use a pair of shoes. We have a Macbeth Mall here. So we have like a Imagine thrift store full of all kinds of wonderful donations from kind, wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I need a 14 and a half. And the largest size that you have is a 14. He's like, I'm used to not having new shoes. Maybe before winter. And I remember this is in the beginning of May. And I was like, huh. And he was like, if that's too much to ask, I'm so sorry. I probably shouldn't approach you. And I was like, no. I was just thinking, I don't usually work that slow. Winter's far from, like, come see me next week. And he was like, really? Yeah, how about Wednesday? And so I gave him his shoes. And then on that day that I came back to the building, he said, Miss Bruce. And I'm in a hurry, but, I paused.
Yeah, sure.
And he's like, I broke in the new shoes you got me. I was like, I love that. Yeah, he's like, I walked to get you this. And he held out, he had a card in his hand. And I was like, oh, I can't accept gifts. And he said, it's just a card. Like, it's paper. You can throw it away afterwards. And I was like, okay. So, and then I was like, wait, they let you walk 2 miles by yourself to get, there's not a rule against that. So he laughed. And I opened the card, and this is when it hit me. I opened the card and it said, you're always talking about living with a grateful heart. Something else I've learned from you is you don't always have to be, have walked a mile in someone's shoes to understand them. Sometimes you just have to be the person willing to buy the shoes so they can walk their mile. And I was like, And so it was that exact moment, like the $3 million check wasn't the moment. I think it was that exact moment that I realized I needed Macbeth as much as they needed me. I had become a humanitarian leader that I would admire, but I had become the type of executive director who rubber stamped things, who forgot what it felt like to be able to impact change right then and there. In the moment for a person standing in front of you without having to file tons of paperwork or consult a committee of people. I had gotten so accustomed to saying, not in my budget, not my mission, see me next month, that I had forgotten that I got into this career to be able to effectuate change at a grassroots level, to be able to be that person. Not just on like occasional deployments, I'll deploy for disasters, but every single day I get to say yes to something. I say no, but I get to say yes to something that feels like a $3 million check for the veterans in this building.
You might have just said it there. My question was going to be, what's the best part of your job? Is what you just said there the best part of your job?
Yeah. I would say yes. And it's funny. I mentor a younger professional, and she was like, how do you know if you're in the right place at the right time? And I gave her the example. I was like, some days I leave the office and I just feel like I've been bucked, right, off a Bronco and then stampeded by a herd of wild hogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I get up the next day and I get in my car and I smile all the way to the office. I feel energized and refreshed and purpose driven when I walk through the door. And anyone who's ever revamped, reorganized, or run a small nonprofit will tell you it can be draining and it's hard to remain energized. It's the people. Mm-hmm. It's always about the people. And so the veterans in this building, nothing beats it. You walk into a town hall meeting and, if you're the person that gets the applause or their face lights up or they trust you when they trust no one else, they know if they come to you, their concerns, their secrets, their needs are either met or kept safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
That's it. That's great stuff. You said several things in the past few minutes that I want to come back to and elaborate, because I think it'll be very valuable for our audience. And not so much, you can tie it to the work that you do now, or you can tie it to just your general experience. So a couple of different themes. I'll just start with different topics. Work ethic. You've mentioned it a few times, something that started in childhood and is carried through. I mean, when you say 16, 18 hour days, you know, that's not for the faint of heart when it comes from a work ethic perspective. How important is that in general? How important has that been in your career? And what do you say to the people that say work harder, not smarter, or work smarter, not harder?
So I would say that they're absolutely right. I think that you have to have a healthy balance. You do. You have to make time for the permanent relationships in your life. You have to make time for yourself. You have to be committed to your mental and physical health and well-being. I also think that anyone who's at the C-suite level, who's undertaking a major reorg, would tell you I was lying if I told you I showed up here at 8 and left at 4, or showed up here at 9 and left at 5. Because I've always been the type of person who, you know, you just have to, you have to do whatever it is that needs to be done. And sometimes you get that done in 8 hours, and sometimes you get that done in 16 hours. Sometimes you don't get it done. What we've been doing is taking a strategic approach to our staff. And so identifying the right people to do portions of the work in this building is really important to me. There are over 130 veterans who are counting on me to put the right people in the right place and to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to work 16 hours a day until the right people are in the right place. And once they're in the right place, then I will go back to running and all the other things that I enjoy doing in my free time. And we're getting there. Mm-hmm. I've been here 6 months. I would say we're getting there. We're making progress, but I'm committed to doing well because we did right. Mm-hmm. It's a phrase that I picked up from a board member that I was just charmed by his work ethic. And so I kind of adopted that, you know, and so I just moved forward with that mantra of deeds, not words. And we're going to do well because we do right. And sometimes doing right is longer than 8 hours a day.
I love that. I love that. Work towards the goal and the purpose, not the hours of it. I'm with right there with you on that. How we talked a little bit before we started recording, just about family very briefly. So 5 children, if I'm getting that right, right?
You are.
5 kids. So talk a little bit about I don't love the balance term, right? To me, it's integration. We're just living life. It's not like you're a different person when you walk in the door all of a sudden, right? We carry our things from home into work, and our things from work, sometimes home, whether we should or shouldn't. There's an integration of it. Talk a little bit about being, and this podcast, How'd Her Career Get There. You know, women can have careers in multiple things, including being a full-time mom or having I'm air quoting job where you get paid from somebody else's paycheck, right? But talk a little bit about the integration and your experience of being a mom and working, or just anything on that topic, whether it's advice for you know, just women that maybe have challenges or beat themselves up on the integration of being good or great at everything.
So I guess the first thing that I would say, in all seriousness, one of the things that was really hard for me was to ask for help when I needed help. No one expects for you to be a superwoman. Some people will look at you as if you are one, but deep down, no one expects you to truly carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. So being able to pause and say, wow, could you take little Tommy to soccer because I have this meeting and I can't. Or on the flip side of that, asking a colleague to cover something for you so that you can be in the right place at the right time for your child has something that took me too long to learn because I was so afraid that would translate into she can't. So I would say we are a part of a culture now where that has blurred, right? The lines have blurred around that. I don't think it's no longer interpreted as she can't.
Mm-hmm.
She can, but she needs a little help.
Mm-hmm.
She can. And if you help her, she can do it better. So I think that don't be afraid to ask for help would be my advice. And be honest, right? Be honest about the help you need. Like, because I hear people say, whew, I just need a 10-minute break. And I'm like, really? Because like, you just work 12 hours, like take 30 kind of thing, right? So be honest about what your needs are, not just for your mental health and your physical health, but being honest in your personal relationships and with your colleagues, whether, you know, they report to you or you report to them. If you can have honest conversations with people about what you need to accomplish the tasks ahead of you, I think it'll be life-changing. I know it has changed my life instead of trying to be superwoman. And then wouldn't it be interesting if my children were on here with us because their version might be different than mine. But I would say that for my kids, something that is no joke is they all graduated high school with a ton of community service hours. So, like without fail, like, so integrating sometimes I was like, come on, let's go. We're rolling, right? Integration sometimes meant putting your children someplace they didn't want to be, and the power of mom. And so I would say that ties back into having those honest conversations. You know, kids are smart. They feel deeply. And so saying to my children, listen, I have to be here because I promised I would be here. I need you to be there too, because we have this afterwards, or because I've even said to them, instead of because I said so, because I hated that.
Mm-hmm.
I have said to them, I promise you that someday you'll look back on this and you'll be grateful that you had this experience. It will shape you. You just have to trust me. And if you trust me, get in the car, right? Kind mm-hmm. of thing. And so I think that goes back to having those honest relationships with the people in your life. Every single one of my children now choose to be a volunteer. Three out of the five have raised their hand, you know, to serve in the military. One daughter is, she's extra for sure. I always tease her and say that she's the Kardashian of Carroll County, but she's definitely extra. But she's pre-med and she looks for places to volunteer. She's doing well. And then I have a senior in high school and same, just always looking for ways to quietly and unassumingly insert himself in places where he can help. You know, some people say I'll help and they say it very loudly. He's the opposite. He's one of those people who looks for a quiet, unassuming way mm-hmm. to help. And I have two children who are active duty Air Force. My daughter, she's deployed overseas. And then the son in the middle of those two, went to the Coast Guard, just told me on Sunday that he decided that instead of taking a job at Fort Meade for the NSA, he's decided that he's going to actually go back into the military. And so I was like, what? Okay, mm-hmm. I'm going to do that again. So I would say bringing the truest version of yourself to the relationships that you have is uncomfortable, but usually the best answer.
I love that. I love that. It's funny when you said the, because I said so, I was laughing in my head because parenting styles are obviously different, but I never tell my children because I said so. I always give a reason. And I say, you don't have to agree. You don't have to agree with me, right? Because, I mean, obviously, we're not going to agree. But here's why. With the thought, and we'll see how it pans out as they grow up. My kids are 10 and 6, that they'll learn concepts to apply over time. You know, the logic of why a decision's being made. So, funny.
And I tell my kids, too. I was like, you know, sometimes you gain more out of an experience that you know you don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And experience that you really want to do. You know, sometimes when you roll up your sleeves and grin and bear it, you learn more from that experience than the fun ones sometimes.
We do volunteer work. It sounds like not nearly as much as you and your family, but something that's really important to us is making sure that we're volunteering in the community as a family. And at first, you know, the kids were like, okay, like we're going because, you know, mom and dad said we have to go. But this year they're like excited. You know, we do fundraisers and different things and they're excited and they get into it. So it's cool. It's cool. It's definitely fun to watch. What advice would you, so a couple more questions here. What advice would you give your younger self?
So I think like many female professionals, I spent a good bit of my youth worried about my hair, right? Or my makeup, or being my authentic self at work, or that kind of buying into that whole, like, you can't like the color pink and sparkles and try to be pretty and be smart too. Like, I think I would give my younger self the same advice that I tell my children. You know, you can't give temporary people permanent residence in your heart and your mind. You've just got to just love people anyway, but love yourself more. I would wish I could go back in time and the hours I spent trying to be the version of myself that I thought other people wanted to see were so many hours wasted. I'm okay with being weird. I'm okay with liking pink, you know, showing up wearing things that sparkle. I'm okay with that. You can be a girly girl and still kill it at work. You can be a strategist and like the color pink. And so I would say that's it. I would reassure my younger self that you don't have to be the version that you think everybody wants to see. You don't have to do that. You can just be you. Mm-hmm. And your talents will rise to the top. You know, your skills will shine. You know, be patient. You'll get the opportunity to say, okay, well, look what I can do. So
I love that.
I think it's the advice I would give myself.
And how do you, this is my last question. How do you define success?
So when, I think when you realize that you're in the right place at the right time, that's a success to me. And so if it maybe for different people, it's different. So maybe it's not about money. I mean, you want to be able to meet your obligations, right? But
back to our hierarchy of needs, that being one of them. Yep.
Yes. So I think that success looks like acknowledging, feeling like, and acknowledging and having fruits of your labor reflect that you're in the right place at the right time. And that doesn't mean you haven't had successes or you wouldn't be considered successful by your LinkedIn following, right? What that means is, to me, am I being successful in this moment with the talents and the skills that I have? Am I in the right place at the right time? And if I don't think I am, I found, you know, I would take on extra projects, like stretch projects, to either learn a new skill or meet a new network of people or kind of flex on some old skills that maybe I hadn't used in a while. But this time it happened, I felt like I was in the right place at the right time. And I said yes instead of no, and realized that maybe I wasn't in the right place at the right time. And so to me, that's what success looks like. When you can say, yes, I should be here. That feels successful to me.
Perfect. Perfect. I'm going to get into some rapid fire questions, totally unrelated to everything that we talked about, to close us out. But before I do that, is there anything else that you want to cover or talk about?
I'm okay.
Yeah. All right.
My mantra in life has always been being truthful to yourself and having meaningful relationships, and that people matter above anything else. So I feel like the answers that I've given you kind of reflect that. So I'm okay.
Beautiful. I love it. I love that. And I love your entire energy surrounding that and how you transfer that. It seems like at work and to your family. I just, seems like you authentically live what it is that you're saying based on this, you know, 40-minute conversation with you. But
I appreciate that. And, yeah, you know, it's something I'll say that I guess, so along our careers, sometimes we get acknowledged or recognized or we get an award for something. For me, shortly after I came to Maryland, I took the executive director role. My daughter, who at the time was 17, and you know, well, maybe you don't look out. 17-year-old daughters sometimes just don't think their mom's that great. So she came to my office to get cash, of course. Why else would she come? But in her exit, when I went back to my desk, I noticed she had left a pink, of course, sticky note on my computer monitor that said, "I'm so proud of you, Mom."
Oh my gosh. But look, here, this is the second time you're going to get me. I'm eyes watering here.
In the right place at the right time. And so you talk about like dragging your kids to things and saying, because I didn't say because I said so, I would often say, just be still, just mm-hmm. be still, you know, give it a minute. Or I promise someday you'll look back on this and it'll help you make decisions, or you'll have a better understanding of why or why not. Right. And so it just felt like in that moment, it took 17 years to feel successful with her, but it was the right place in the right time.
Oh gosh. That one hits me because I always think as a parent, and this is really at any age, but at the parenting decisions that I'm making now, you know, we'll find out. I mean, obviously there's little micro things along the way, but 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now, is the decisions that we're making now as parents, how does that turn into how your kids are and how they show up in the world? So it's, I can imagine getting something as small as a post-it, just being like a,
I said, you would think it would have been like a Grammy, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she knows, I told her, it's, to me, it's the most profound accolade that I've ever received. I'm proud of you, Mom.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's funny. It's like, you know, we tell our kids that we're proud of them so often. And it's like, but when the inverse happens, it has such an effect, I think, on parents that, you know, is not, we don't often talk about it, but when your kids say things like, "Good job, Mom," or "I'm proud of you, Mom," it like, it really hits, you know?
I think too, it changes the dynamic of that relationship, because sometimes like we work, or we overcome. We go around, right? Whatever the path is. And when someone says in a sincere way that they're proud of you, they can't say that to you unless they somehow subliminally or what they acknowledge the work you put into accomplishing whatever it is they're proud of. And so sometimes just being acknowledged for your hard work, right? We know that that's very gratifying and motivating for people. And so, but to have it come from a 17-year-old, my broke best friend, who just meant more to me than anything else.
Yep. I love that. All right, let's go into rapid fire here. So this is like maybe 6-8 questions.
Man, I hope I know the answers.
Well, they're
just, nervous.
No, they're not. It's not like a pop quiz. Don't worry. And I'm going to get into it. And I'll just get to it because you're going to, they're so silly. Okay, hot or cold?
Oh, can I choose warm?
Nope.
Darn it. I'll take cold.
Okay. East Coast, West Coast?
East Coast.
Astronaut or deep sea diver?
Astronaut.
Watch a movie in a theater or at home?
In a theater.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Brick or stone?
Stone.
Okay. And the last one, binge a series or watch it one episode 1 week at a time?
binge a series. If I've got time, I'm doing it.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. Perfect.
I'm all in. I'm committed.
I love it. Well, Misty, thank you so much. This was, I really enjoyed the conversation and learning more about your background and the work that you're doing today. Such important work, needless to say. You know, just the support that our veterans get is just so crucial and so important. And to see organizations and people like you doing that work and support for them is just really important. And I'm not telling you anything that you don't already know, but just reinforcing it.
I do. I appreciate it. I believe that exactly what President Lincoln said, you know, a nation that doesn't honor its veterans, its warfighters, will soon perish. I think that there's people that they've helped or that they said, I'll go, for people who couldn't go, wouldn't go. And I just can't imagine the United States without having a cadre of people who are committed to serving veterans. I just can't imagine it.
Oh. Well, thank you for the work that you do.
If you and your family would ever like to come and volunteer at MCVET for an experience, you have my contact information. Reach out and we'll see if we can tailor something that's age appropriate for the children.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I appreciate that. And for anyone else who's listening, that's interested in volunteer opportunities or donations or how they can help, what's the best way to get in touch with you or get in touch with the organization?
Yeah, so I would say email info@mcvet.org, because there are multiple people who see those emails, and so the right staff member will snatch it up and help you. And then our website is being revamped. It's still up, but it'll look completely differently by the end of the week. So I would say you can check out our website at mcvet.org. And we have Facebook. And I don't really know what other social media accounts we have, but that's okay, because I just hired a communications manager. See what I did there?
Like, there you go.
Shaved an hour off my day. So
I love it. And that's mcvet, just so I have the spelling, mcvet.org.
Okay. That's right.
Perfect. All right, great. Well, again, everyone, my guest was Misty Bruce, the Executive Director of the Maryland Center for Veterans Education and Training. And thank you so much, Misty.
Thank you.
All right. This is the Lauren Asghari Podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And we'll see you next time.
Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd Her Career Get There?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.